Welcome to the Two Mics on the Record podcast.
Welcome indeed.
Who are you?
I am Mike Porky Parry.
And who am I?
You are MG, also known as the other half of the Two Mics.
Mike Graham, some people call me.
Mike Graham as well. Now, and we sometimes cruelly called Loaf Face.
Yes, that is a cruel name, which only you use, actually. Now, here's a funny thing.
Yes.
We can explicitly
funny
reveal...
Funny thing, why aren't you laughing then?
Well, I could laugh, but you know. Here's a piece of news that we're breaking news that we've got here for listeners of the Two Mics podcast. Called On The Record, which is growing, by the way, in leaps and bounds. We're going to go bursting through the 6 million listeners pretty soon.
Yes, we are,
it's
indeed.
It's going to be fantastic. We are in a new location. I know this for some people, this might not be very interesting, but some people find it very interesting.
For us. Yeah, where are we then?
Interesting for us, because we're now in the heart of what I would regard as kind of showbiz land.
That's right.
Right. We were recording this in a very nice studio in Victoria.
That's right.
Which we used to really enjoy going to, and it was very nice. People there were great. I'm not going to give the name, just in case. I don't want to give anybody, you know, any grief.
Just in case we have to go back.
Well, also, in case somebody decides to firebomb the place because they don't like the two mics.
That's
right, But we're now in a very bespoke little studio.
We are.
Above, not a million miles away from one of our favourite restaurants, Rules.
Well, I said, okay, we'll go there. It looks like it's an exciting new venture with new people, but only on the condition that after one of these sessions,
condition one,
you're going to buy me dinner in Rules.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, we may have to spoof for it.
Yeah. Yes.
Have you ever spoofed?
No, I don't like that. I think that's stupid.
You don't like it.
Is that all like scissors, hammer, paper, and all that?
Scissors, hammer, paper.
Yeah, isn't that what it is? Isn't it?
No, that would be rock, paper, scissors.
Oh, rock, paper, scissors.
There's no hammer involved. Unless you bring your own hammer.
Which that referee got.
No, spoofing. Spoofing is when you have three coins.
Oh, okay.
Right, in your hand.
Yeah.
And you can either have 3, 2, 1, or none.
Right.
And you put your hand out like that in a fist-like shape.
Yes.
And you have to guess the total number of coins.
Yeah.
And it's a fantastic game.
If I lost, my fist would end up in your face without a shadow of a doubt.
If you lost, you'd have to buy dinner,
Which
is not cheap in Rules.
Last time I had dinner in Rules was with Sir Bernard Ingham.
Oh, that was a while ago.
But he wasn't Sir then. It was a long time ago. Yes, he is. And his son John is still working for the Express.
Yeah, well, he's never going to move, is he?
Well, John should have got a bit more ambitious. I employed him, right? So,
You were the one that gave him a job.
I was the one who gave him a job.
Yeah, why you gave him a job, don't you?
Yeah, because...
You were sucking up to his dad.
I wasn't, but
yes,
the deputy editor, Paul Potts, was.
Yeah.
Because Paul Potts was the deputy editor and regarded himself as a political guru.
Yes.
And Bernard Ingham was Mrs. Thatcher's...
He was the guy that brought Fiona Miller along as well, wasn't he?
Eh? Did he bring her along?
Yeah, he did, yeah. Because I remember
Bernard Ingham did?
No,
oh,
Potts.
Yeah,
because when I got made acting features editor, one of the many sort of stitch-ups that I was put through as a young sort of thrusting executive. Fiona Miller was a feature writer, and Paul Potts would come up and go, Mike, have you got something for Fiona today? I'd be like, well, not really, no. Give her something to do. And he was always trying to get her to write stuff because he knew that she was Alistair Campbell's other half. And he was desperate to sort of get on side with her.
Yeah.
And of course, shortly thereafter, I mean, one of the things she'll never now admit to is that she used to write for the very right-wing Daily Express newspaper.
Well, I'm surprised she was with you as a feature writer, because when I inherited her as a reporter in Fleet Street in the old building...
Right.
Her only ambition was to get to the Commons as a political writer,
As
was Alistair's with The Mirror.
I think that he couldn't get her into that, so what he gave her, he used to give her like op-ed pieces to write.
Political feature political stories.
You know, when you're getting the really heavy-hitting, page eights. Fiona's the girl for that.
That's right, let's examine the Liberals'
policy. She wasn't
policy.
Very good, by the way.
Yeah, she wasn't really good at all. I mean, but bright girl and a great political player, so to speak. She inherited that from her father, Bob Miller, who was the...
Wasn't he a big trade unionist?
Yeah, I was going to say, he was father of the chapel.
That's it.
And of course, they lived in a £1 million house in Hampstead somewhere.
Or High. Well, she lived with Alistair Campbell
in
that's a big
right.
house in Gospel Oak.
Yeah, but her father lived in an even bigger house, like a white-walled house, you know, in somewhere like Highgate or something.
Right.
Which all these guys who came down to work for the Express after the war bought for nothing.
Yeah.
You know, they bought for like 12,000.
Yeah.
And 30 years later, they're worth 1.2 million.
Yes.
You know? But anyway, that's by the by.
Yes.
The point is, Bernard Ingham, so Paul was desperate to grovel to this guy, so all of a sudden his son turns up, you know, a callow youth.
Yes.
And
quite bookish.
Bookish, yeah. Looked a bit like
Joe 90 glasses.
Yeah, that's right, Joe 90 glasses.
I think he had really bad eyesight, because I'm pretty sure that his glasses were those kind of bottom.
Well, in that case, he picked a really strange hobby, didn't he?
What was that?
Bird watching. Your fucking eyes don't work, you know.
There was another guy
need,
that did
he
that.
Might, he might need
Do you know that guy on the Daily Star? Stuart somebody.
Yes.
He was a twitcher.
Yeah. Well, Stuart Winter.
Stuart Winter, that's
it. But the biggest twitcher of the lot, both as a bird watcher and as a twatcher, was, of course, Wolfman.
Well, Neil Wallace.
Wolfman, yeah.
Was he a bird watcher?
An avid bird watcher.
Really?
Yeah, avid bird watcher.
I never knew that.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Isn't that extraordinary?
Amongst other things. Yeah. But anyway, so... So
here's the scenario. So yeah. Paul Potts, yeah. your boss, mm. who you're always trying to fucking suck up to, right?
No,
comes
I wasn't,
up
no,
to you and goes,
I hate him, to be honest.
Well, I know you hated him.
He's always trying to stitch me up, you know. Didn't like drunks.
No,
you know,
which is amazing. You're fucking you.
Yeah, yeah,
no,
yeah.
but so he
yeah,
says yeah. to you, "No, hello, Mike." Mm. And he used to have the thing where he'd go, "We're going to have a quick game of squash, yeah. then really get going."
Yeah, yeah.
And me and Walker used to go, "Why don't you not fucking go for a game yeah. of squash and just really get going before that?"
That's right.
Instead,
yeah.
but he would come to you,
yeah.
and you would do his bidding and go, "Oh yes, Paul, of yeah. course, Paul.
No, no,
yes,
no.
Paul. Of course, I'll and, give Birmingham some a job."
By the way, he used to grovel incessantly to people like the chairman of the company.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
My Lord Stevens.
Well, he'd wait till Nick, the editor, had gone out for lunch, you right. know, and then he'd sort of just somehow end up on the floor,
yeah,
the
yeah.
executive floor and
right.
all that,
yeah.
wandering around, and right. my lordship would come out of his office. Oh,
right.
that's some very interesting political news for
yes.
you. Because, of course, all these guys, these captains of industry, yeah. love the old political gossip
right.
and all that, get in there, thought that he was going to get the job as editor of the Sunday Express
yes.
because of all his political gossip.
Well, do you know, I think I've told you this story.
Turned over.
Because Nick Lloyd came to it, because he used to come to America quite a lot.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
And we were standing, funnily enough, in Bill's Gay 90s,
yeah,
that pub that you
yeah.
remember well,
yeah.
Up in sort of like 49th and 5th or something like that. And he did that thing, you know, his hands shuffled in his pockets and he's
yeah.
kind of, you know,
yeah.
shuffling about, oh, fucking hell, my fucking life's about to take a turn for the worse.
That's right, yeah.
And we're like, well, what do you mean?
Yeah.
What's wrong, Nick? He said, well, I've either got to give the Sunday Express job to my fucking wife,
yeah.
Eve,
yeah.
or I've got to give it to my deputy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went, well, everybody went, well, what's wrong with that?
Mm.
Well, whichever one doesn't fucking get it, it's not going to be too happy,
yeah,
are they?
That's right, yeah.
And he basically asked everybody's advice what he should do.
But Nick hated making decisions,
yeah.
and he hated confrontations with people.
Yeah.
And he was one of those great, you know, office political players, Nick, who never made a decision, so he never got anything right
no.
or anything wrong,
no.
you know what I mean?
But he had to help out on this one. It wasn't
yeah.
technically his decision, but
yeah.
he had to advise.
Yeah.
And we all said to him, well, look, we all know Eve, Nick. You know, you live with Eve.
Yeah.
You better not piss her off because your life will be a fucking
That's right,
misery,
yeah,
you
of
know?
Course, yeah.
So,
yeah.
of course, he then recommended yeah. Eve Pollard gets the job, and she got
That's
the
right.
job.
And then she gave the deputy's job to one of the biggest morons in Fleet Street,
yeah.
Mackenzie's brother, Craig.
No. Was it not the other guy? Who was the other
no,
guy?
No, Craig ended up getting it. Because I was supposed to go for an interview.
Oh, yeah.
Nick said, you know, Mike, I think Nick was trying to get rid of me, actually.
Well, he was, because he eventually did get rid of you.
He did, yeah.
To America.
Yeah, he did,
no, but Charles Golding was the other guy. Do you remember him?
Charles Golding?
He was known as the Quisling, because he was Eve Pollard's spy, basically.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And he was kind of the real deputy editor.
Oh, okay.
Because
well,
even
maybe.
Though he may not have had the title,
maybe
he kind of was her bot, her you know, guy
yeah.
that ran it when
well,
she wasn't there.
Craig ended up doing the job, I know for a fact. But no, what happened was, Nick said, I'll put a word in for you with Eve.
Presumably, they all were after that job, though, weren't they?
Well,
wasn't
I wasn't.
Alan Frame after it?
Not
you see?
No. Frame thought he should have been the editor,
no.
and he lost it out on it the next time round. But no, what the situation was that I think it needed to get rid of me, or wanted to get rid of me, you know. A bit too loud these days, Michael, you know, a lot of female executives object a little bit to your leery sort of attitude, you know, and you know, it's all bollocks, you know.
Well, everybody on Twitter's got you down to a T.
Well,
I mean, you know, in recent times, they've been tweeting about your, you know, because there are new bosses about
yeah.
and things like that.
Yeah.
And people say, you know, have they been given the full briefing about Porky's ways?
Oh, really?
I, you know,
yeah.
your reputation precedes you.
I don't think it does. I've
it
got
does.
A great reputation.
Yeah,
fairness,
no, I'm not saying there's
integrity,
anything wrong with your,
and all that kind
I'm
of stuff.
I'm not sure about integrity.
But,
but the point is that, you know, people know what you like. And that has possibly helped you and hindered you in the same way.
Yes, that's a very sort of mixed message. But anyway, in those days, I didn't go out for lunch a lot. I used to let Walker go out for lunch because Walker would drink three bottles, come back, and then run through the news file and get it all right,
you
just
get it
like
all
that.
Right,
it was
yeah.
good. I used to stay there and make sure everything was going on. Walker's my deputy, but because my head was like filled full of 3 hours of stories coming in, I used to get him to go through it and he'd get it right. So
Nick, did you not get an interview then for the deputy editor?
Oh, yeah, I did. But you see, I thought it wasn't going to happen.
Right.
Nick kept telling me yes, yes. And anyway, so one day I went out for lunch with Walker.
Oh, yeah.
We had four bottles between us,
right.
you know. We went to the Chop House up near...
Tower Bridge?
No, the other one, actually, going up towards Mount Pleasant.
Oh, the Farringdon one, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that place.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's still there.
I don't think it is. We went in there and we came back, you know, and my words were slurring, like shadow of a doubt. So I sat down and said, right, Ian, run through the news list, let's see what we've got. Because it was about 20 past three,
yeah.
and of course, evening conference was 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the phone went,
right.
and it was, oh, hello, Mike. I said, yeah, what are you on? I'm busy. And it was, oh, it's Roseanne here. I'm Eve's PA.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. Hmm, okay, I'm still busy. What can I do for you? Eve thinks you should come and see her and talk to her about the vacant deputy editor's role on the Sunday Express. I said, oh, that's great, okay, can we fix it up for early next week? She said, no, she means now.
Right.
I said, what, now? I said, I can't possibly. I said, we've got a conference at 4 o'clock. Yeah. She said, no, no, she's had a word with Nick, that's okay. Could you send your deputy in, please?
And what a nightmare.
Yeah, complete nightmare.
So you had to, did you have to try to sober up or what?
Well, I couldn't sober up. It was obvious I couldn't. And so I went upstairs with Eve. And all I could think of saying was, Eve, you know, you're a woman of elegance. You know, you're very intelligent.
Did you compliment her large breasts?
No, I didn't. You? No, no.
Thank God for that.
Yeah, I fell short of that. But I said, you know, you're intelligent. Yeah, yeah, intelligent. Yeah, and I just kept saying things like, you know, you're one of great style. You know, you have presence. You know what I am, Eve?
Right.
I'm a fucking street fighter. Yeah. I'm your street fighter, Eve. I can be. And every time I said it, Eve, you know, looked more and more
grimaced.
Askance.
Yes.
Yeah, and grimaced. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, you know.
So anyway, fortunately, I didn't get the job.
Well, you would have liked it anyway. You'd have hated,
I'd have hated it. Yeah.
You'd have hated that job.
I'd have hated working for Eve, who treated men like as her vassals, you know, sending them out on errands to buy things for her and all that kind of stuff, you know. And B, what do you do as a deputy editor of a Sunday paper for the other 6 days?
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, all you got to do, basically, is cause problems and then solve them.
That's right.
Because that's what most of these people do.
No, that's right. Right.
Funnily enough, talking about old Lord Stevens, the reason that Richard Addis got the job, apparently, at the Daily Express when he was brought in after Nick Lloyd was fired, was because he once had dinner with Lord Stevens and Lady Stevens.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And Lady Stevens thought he was terribly impressive.
That's right, yeah.
And therefore he should get the job.
That's right.
What a fucking joke.
No, it wasn't.
I mean,
it was
like Richard,
a joke,
he's a good guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, absolute bollocks,
It was an absolute joke and all this went wrong. Mind you, when she moved in, she took over from Brian Hitchens.
Now, on the Sunday Express, yes.
Now, Brian Hitchens was a real Northern lad, macho Northern lad.
He'd come from the Daily Star, hadn't he?
He'd come right to the Daily Star. They wanted to sort of get rid of him there. And I think they must have given that to Dawn, maybe, then, or someone else. No,
no, Peter Hill, I think.
Oh, Peter. No, it wasn't even Peter Hill. It was his predecessor, Walker. His name was
Walker.
That's
right, yeah.
And he was a drunk. He was the night editor on the Express.
That's right, yeah.
Who became editor on the... And Peter Hill was his deputy.
Yes.
Because Peter Hill was still a drunk, but Peter Hill took the pledge.
I remember, funnily enough, I took... I think I took Peter Hill out.
Yeah.
When I was given the kind of... the catalogue of changing all the fucking computers around.
Right, okay.
Which Addis was meant to do, but he rang me up one day and said, oh, Mike, do you know anything about computers? I said, well, not really. He said, well, you know, we've this thing called QPS we're bringing in. I said, oh, he's spending a lot of money on it. He said, I want you to take over. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I want you to be head of production and you will bring in all these computers for the whole business, right? So I was dealing for the whole company.
Yeah.
I had to go and make this presentation to Lord Hollick.
Good
right?
Yeah.
And basically, I didn't really know what I was doing.
No.
However, I had to take Peter Hill out for lunch to explain to him what we were doing. We took him to the Oxo Tower.
Yeah.
And by the time we'd finished, he literally couldn't fucking walk.
No,
right?
he couldn't.
I said it, and I still have, I believe, the record. The guys at Daily Star were like, we've never seen him this drunk.
Yeah.
He said he goes out all the time drinking.
That's
but
right.
We've never seen him this
come
drunk.
Back this drunk. No.
You've absolutely fucking banjacked the guy.
I went on a freebie.
And I was fine.
I went on a freebie with him once to Spain.
Yeah.
To Marbella, you know, or something like that. You know, big plush hotel and all that. He was pissed from the time he got on the plane at Heathrow because he'd spent 3 or 4 hours in the departure lounge.
Yeah.
And he was pissed all the time he got back off the plane 5 days later. It was one of those sort of mini breaks, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But no, he and so what happened is, so Brian brought in all this, Brian was a Northern lad.
Right.
And when he took the job, he said, do you know why I'm taking over the Sunday Express? It's as British as roast beef, and so am I. Roast beef and Yorkshire pudding and all
talking
this.
Talking about these fucking trips, right?
Yeah.
I remember when, you remember a guy called Tom Petrie, who was the news editor of The Sun, right?
Yeah.
Under Kelvin McKenzie. When Alan Hall was getting married, and he got married in the end, actually, to my sister in England.
Yes.
But he had a stag do in New York.
Right.
And that was, I think, the first time I met Ian Walker, because he came over for it.
I see.
Petrie also came over. Loads of people came over for this stag do that I'd never met before.
Yeah, why did Walker come?
I guess he was invited and he fancied coming to New York.
Yeah, but who was Walker working for then?
I think he must have been working for
the Mail, or
maybe
Standard.
The Mail.
Yeah.
Or the Express, I don't know.
Yeah.
It was early 90s, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but Hall's history was Sun and then Mirror in America.
Anyway, we were standing in Eamon Durant's. This was Saturday night, and they'd all flown in on the Friday.
Yes.
Basically been on the Turks.
Yes, yes.
Constantly, right?
Yes.
By this stage, it was about 7 o'clock in the evening on a Saturday night. We were standing in Eamon Durant's, and Tom Petrie suddenly sort of made a move to go outside.
Yeah.
And we were all thinking, because we all smoked in those days, but we smoked in the pub, you know.
Yes.
He went outside and we were watching. Go, what the fuck's going on? Where's he going?
Mm.
And he went out and he came back about 5 minutes later and we went, all right, Tom.
Mm.
Fine. I said, what are you doing?
Mm.
He said, I just went out to see if I could get the papers. He didn't even know he was in New York. That's how drunk he was.
He said,
well, is anybody going to get the papers?
Mm.
And they said, what fucking papers, Tom?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
You know, the papers. Yeah. You're going to get the fucking first editions.
Mm. Mm.
And we said, well, one, it's 7 o'clock. Mm. Two, you're in New York.
Huh? Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
He had no idea.
Good God.
He was so pissed that he didn't even realise he was in America.
Well, two times since then, he turned up at Talk Radio in the very early days, you know, as just a hanger-on, you know. Mackenzie would employ people for free.
Yeah.
And Mackenzie had sacked him at the Sun.
Yeah.
For no reason whatsoever, except that Tom turned around one day and said, I can't fucking do it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well,
his life
was
made of misery, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. You got a call every morning from Mackenzie, from the back of the Jag, to be told that yesterday's paper was a complete load of bollocks.
Yeah.
It was crap. It was useless. And today's had better be better.
Yeah.
What stories have you got for today? And Tom would run through them saying, they're all crap
and
bollocks and useless, you know, and all this kind of. And Tom just one day just said, fuck you, and just put the phone down and walked out. And everybody thought the most sensible thing to do would be to ring Tom up and say, look, really sorry and all that. They appointed Jamie Pyatt, who'd never done it before, you know, district man. And Mackenzie vowed, you know, he won't get a penny out of me, until the first solicitor's letter arrived, and then they paid him about 300,000 quid. But Tom then just became a professional drunk, really. And I saw him one morning, no joke, in Borough Market, at about 7 o'clock. I'd gone up there to see somebody.
Had he not been like on the overnight or something, working?
Not at all. Not at all.
Overnight or something.
No, he wasn't working. This is only like last year sometime. He hasn't been working for, you know, probably 10 years, Tom.
No, right.
And I mean, whether he'd staggered out of a casino somewhere, or something, I don't know. But I went up there because we'd finished at 4 that day, right? But there was somebody I wanted to see at breakfast, so I went up there and went to the Market Porter at 6 o'clock. And I spent an hour in there till 7, came out, and bumped into Tom on the pavement. And again, he was, oh, great to see you, you know, folks. And, come on, let's go and have a drink. I said, Tom, I said, 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
What? You know, I mean, he, you know, but anyway, what happened was, so Brian Hitchin brought all his hangers on.
Yeah.
And one of them, who was the news editor, was another northern lad of his, a friend of his, like that. He was absolutely fucking useless. He couldn't make a decision, he couldn't do anything, but he was just a yes man.
Wasn't Bert Reevely from the Star?
No, it wasn't Bert Reevely, no. But anyway, what happened was, the first thing Eve did when she got in was call him into the office and say, hey, I'm sorry, I don't think you have any merits as a news editor whatsoever. I'd like to be nice about it, but I can't. Now, will you fuck off?
No.
And that was it. He was gone.
She was great. I did like her.
He went to an industrial tribunal where he described Eve as being, Eve was like a woman who took sweets out of a sweet box, unwrapped them, and then threw away the toffee wrappers on the pavement. And I was a toffee wrapper. Oh, he was absolutely useless. Absolutely useless.
Absolute wanker. Anyway, so...
Right, listen, I'll tell you what I'm going to tell you about.
Yeah, go on then.
I'm going to talk about women in a very nice way, okay?
Women?
Because...
when you say talk about women in a nice way, why wouldn't you talk about women in a nice way?
Well, sometimes if I was talking, for instance, about maybe a politician who I thought was rather brutal or something like that, I might say something like that. I might say something brutal about a businesswoman, you know, who runs a football club or something like that and make some sort of judgment on that.
Uh-huh.
But no, what I want to tell you is quite an amazing story from your part of the world, okay?
Okay.
Now,
I'm always looking for that.
Yeah, and your part of the world, of course, is Glasgow, all right?
Well, you say that. I did live there.
Yes.
I'm not from there.
Both your parents come from Scotland.
Both my parents are from Glasgow, yes, that's true.
Yeah.
I know the place very well.
Yes, indeed.
Your other former broadcasting partner and current broadcasting partner, Alan Brazil, of course, comes from Glasgow as well.
Ooh.
So you've got to be careful what you say.
Absolutely.
In case he gets back to him.
Now, what happened was, right, burghers of Glasgow, that is the mayor and all the people, during the First World War, they decided that far too many people in Glasgow were getting far too pissed. And that's why one of the reasons why the licensing laws were introduced across the country to restrict drinking at lunchtime from 11 till 2:30.
Yes.
And they had to shut all afternoon. They're not open again until 5:30 at night.
Right.
But they went a bit further in Glasgow.
Right.
What they said was, they said even with those restricted hours, it might involve, this is 1919, it might involve servicemen who've had terrible wars coming back from the war and being delicate, what we call shell shock these days.
Well,
you know,
they call it PTSD, we call it now.
Post-traumatic shock disorder and all that kind of stuff.
Stress. Yeah.
And what they said was that sometimes these men who hadn't had any female companionship for some 4 years in the trenches would come back, go into a pub in Glasgow, and if there was a very attractive barmaid behind the bar, and that's what landlords used to do, attract, you know, it's good business.
Because I'm pretty sure, is it not the case that women were not allowed in bars in Glasgow at that time?
Except if you were behind the bar. Okay. This is the whole point, right? Barmaids. So what they said was, they said, you know, in order to stop the men drinking more, because when they see a pretty girl, they get all macho, try to drink more, want to buy beer off her because she's behind the bar. An order went out that all landlords and owners of pubs in Glasgow had to employ only ugly barmaids, right? They had to be really ugly.
Well, luckily in Glasgow, that's not a problem. There's plenty of them.
That's a bit harsh.
Well, it's not really. No. I mean, there are some very beautiful women in Scotland, you know, but there are some pretty, shall we say, well, maybe I shouldn't say that. It's probably unkind.
Yeah, but in particular, barmaids were not allowed to have, what shall I say, distinctive cleavages.
Really?
No, they weren't. They weren't. They had to look manly.
Well, hang on. I mean, you wouldn't really, in those days, 100 years ago, you wouldn't surely encounter a woman with a massive cleavage in a bar.
Yeah.
Would you?
Of course you would.
Why?
Well, hang on. Haven't you seen the taverns in the Middle Ages where the serving wenches had fulsome breasts
but that was
their cotton blouses,
Yeah, but that was the Middle Ages. Yeah. We're talking Victorian times where everything was covered up.
No. I mean,
they even used
what
to cover
Lily Langtry?
They used to cover up the fucking the chairs and the tables.
No.
Yeah, they did.
No, but not in bars in Glasgow.
Really?
This is the exception.
Well, you see, funny you should talk about bars in Glasgow, because one of the things I discovered when I first went up there to work, because when I used to go as a kid, of course, my dad was not a frequenter of bars. What I noticed was they were all like smoked glass, very, you know, you could see inside them. And it was only apparently in 1977 that they allowed people to put proper windows into pubs so you could see in.
In Glasgow?
They used to have a rule that you were not allowed to see inside a pub from the outside.
I mean, that's very American, isn't it? I went to Boston once.
But again, because American bars are very male. There's a lot of bars in America where you only see men.
Yeah, that's right, But you don't see many windows in American bars to this day. I used to go to some really sort of Midwest towns and places like Milwaukee, even in Chicago, and they were just brick wall bars. That's right.
Did you ever go to that place called the Billy Goat? In Chicago.
Billy
the only reason I mentioned
it. Is that where all the hacks went?
Yes,
that's right.
Underneath the Chicago Tribune. The only reason I went there is because Mike McGovern, who used to come from Chicago, had said to me when I went, because I went out there once because I think Margaret Thatcher was there doing a speech for
Right,
me.
Yeah.
So I went out there. I love Chicago. I thought it was a really great town. Yeah. Lots of really good bars and music places and everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
But he said, you must go to the Billy Goat. And I went there and it was fucking horrendous. It was like this kind of like strip lighting,
right?
So it wasn't dark, it was very bright, and it was a kind of it was a bar, but they also had a kind of griddle to make hamburgers and things, and it was all like formica tables.
God, awful.
It was horrendous.
And very bright.
Very bright.
God,
it was like it was more like a diner.
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
But you could get a drink.
Yeah.
But it was kind of, it was almost in, do you know where in Fleet Street where they used to load up the newspaper lorries?
Yes.
It was almost like that.
Yes, I know.
In a kind of a sort of loading dock.
Yeah, I know, loading bay.
And
yeah.
So it wasn't in I thought it was gonna be this romantic kind of place, you know.
No,
it really wasn't.
But anyway, so what happened is that when the Second World War came around, right?
Right.
For some unknown reason, all the ugly women in Glasgow went and joined up as nurses or the women's
all
Royal
the ugly
Voluntary
women.
Service. Yeah, yeah. That's
probably a bit harsh.
Well, no,
there
it's,
might have
it's
been
not.
Some very pretty women.
No. And then they had to rescind the law about attractive barmaids and allow attractive women to become barmaids again in Glasgow.
Okay.
Okay.
And did it result in a mass kind of
population explosion? No, not really. Nothing really happened. But, you know, what a strange law to have. You could only have it in Glasgow, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Now, talking about that, and of course, I was
researching. Have you ever had any kind of a liaison with a barmaid?
Yes.
Have you?
I did a trial once in Middlesbrough. And I've mentioned this trial before. It was the Crown Court in Middlesbrough.
Right.
And it was a doctor, Paul Vickers. And I've told you this one before, but this is absolutely relevant.
Mm.
And he poisoned his wife with tablets for the love of his girlfriend called Pamela Collison.
Oh, yes.
And
did he not get off with it?
She got off. He got 17 years.
Oh, right.
And the saddest thing was, at the end of the trial, the son, he had a son aged 18 just going to university, and the son no longer had his mother because his father had murdered his mother.
Right.
His mother had, you know, like a blood illness, and he kept giving her the wrong tablets, and then claiming she died of anemia, but they did tests on the body.
So it was a bit like a sort of a Munchausen's type scenario.
They exhumed the body, right?
Yeah.
But he claimed, well, I only killed her because Pamela asked me to, because she wanted to move into the house, and Pamela said, I knew nothing about it.
Right.
Then they found all these prescriptions where Pamela had been to the chemist and got them, but he'd written them.
Right.
So she said, but they're written in doctor's language. Yeah. I didn't know what he was ordering and all that. So she got off. He went down for 17 years. The 18-year-old son at the end of the trial, you know, all the fervour at the end of the trial, people scrabbling around trying to get interviews, talks with George Carman was the guy who put him down, right?
Yeah.
And the poor boy just walked off down the street and that was it.
Yeah.
No mother, no father for 17 years.
What happened to the woman?
The
mistress.
I never heard from her again, but she went free.
Right.
And she's a very attractive girl.
Nobody buy her up? Somebody must have brought her up, surely.
I think Frank Thorne did, actually.
Did he?
Yeah, I think Frank Thorne did for the
people.
Mirror.
Oh, for the people.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway.
So what about the barmaid?
Well, there's only one decent hotel anywhere near Middlesbrough, and that's called the Dragon Aura.
Yeah.
And that was, I think that was pulled down about 10 years ago, but it was only sort of semi-decent.
Right.
You know what those hotels were like in the 70s and 80s in cities?
They always had the same smell, didn't they?
They had the same smell. They were like 40 hotels.
They always had like weird staircases all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, just awful, you know, just really awful.
Single beds everywhere.
But they had a cocktail bar there, and it was simply a matter of us, you know, being out all day, coming back to the hotel. Because what we do is, you do the trial would finish 4:30, into the boozer next door to the court till about 7 or 8, then back to the hotel.
We had a file, presumably, at some point.
Yeah, we've done all that, Did all that from the court before we left the court, you know. A few
cocktails.
But
this was the days before computers, so you were having to dictate it
down
the phone.
On the phone, definitely, yeah.
Did you all have your own phone in the courthouse?
Mostly.
Yeah.
Or with somebody like the Sunday shared with somebody else or something like that. Yeah, but mostly,
yeah.
And that's the first time I realised that the Press Association value to journalism in this country, none of the reporters, including me, who covered that trial, had a decent shorthand note.
Right.
So you knew the gist of the trial and all that, but afterwards you always went to the PA reporter, all of us together, sat around in a circle. Well, she said, this is what he said, that's what he said.
Right.
And wrote it down slowly.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was, you know, we were supposed to be...
See, I was always terrified when I first came back to work in Fleet Street from America.
Yeah.
Because I'd never even done a journalism course at all.
No, exactly.
I mean, at least you'd done one.
Yeah, that's right.
Where they probably taught you a bit of shorthand.
Yeah.
I'd never learned it in my life.
No, exactly.
And I was terrified that somebody was going to send me up to the High Court and say, take over from, you know, whoever.
That's right.
You know, Paul Fuller.
Take it down verbatim.
He'll give you his shorthand notes and you can write the story.
Well, you can't read anybody's shorthand anyway. Lucky,
but it never happened.
No, never happened. No. But anyway, so then we get it back to the hotel, cocktail bar for a few sherbets, out for dinner.
So you were all staying in the same place?
Well, there's only one hotel, Dragon Aura. Out for dinner somewhere.
How did you get off with it then? Surely there must be better candidates.
No, I'm telling you. Came back, you know, and the bar that closed to everybody except residents then. And then we would stay there probably till midnight, you know, and a few more cocktails.
Yeah.
So I just chanced my hand with this, not literally, but I, you know, I just said to
her,
how you doing, all that, you know, we got to talk.
Did you give her a name?
No idea.
Yeah.
Only saw her for 2 nights.
Okay.
And she said, do you want to walk me home? And I said, yeah, okay, that sounds okay. So we got to her home and she said, come in.
Why don't you just walk her upstairs?
Well, because she lived round the corner, virtually. Well, not round the corner, but sort of, you know, she lived a couple of streets away, that was all.
Yeah.
You know, everybody lives a couple of streets away in Middlesbrough, if you know what I mean. So I said, yeah, okay, that's good. So we got there, do you want to come in? So we went in and her bedroom was on the ground floor.
Yeah.
Which I thought, again, was a bit odd, you know, because it was like a two-storey house.
Mm.
So we were in bed, and romance was taking place,
when
all of a sudden the fucking door slammed, the front door. And she said, what's wrong? I said, the door. She said, yeah, it's all right. I said, who's that? She said, it's my dad. I said, what? She said, no, don't worry. It's no problem. He won't be coming in here. You know, he knows not to, and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
Anyway, that happened for 2 consecutive nights.
Right.
The problem was, I got invited back for a third night of romance and said no, because I just didn't want to. You know,
what do you mean you didn't want to?
Well, I had better things to do.
Well, like what? Back to the bar.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
hang on,
you can't drink in the bar, though.
Sorry?
If she's in the fucking bar, how do you fucking avoid her?
Because we would take drink up to the rooms and all sorts of things, and there were air hostesses there and all this kind of stuff. You know, air hostesses from Leeds Bradford Airport.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. Don't
Sounds very glamorous.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But... Then she got nasty.
It's like an episode of Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, that's right. Nasty. She got nasty because I realised after night two, uh-huh, I left my watch there. Now, it wasn't a Rolex.
You see, now that's always a problem.
Yeah, yeah. Now, it wasn't a
Why'd
Rolex.
Why did you take your watch off?
Hey?
Why did you take your watch off?
Well, I just thought it was a decent thing to do, really. You know what I mean? I thought I would, you know. So, I take my socks off, so I took my watch off.
Yeah, you should certainly take your socks off. Yeah, your watch you can leave on, though.
So, anyway, I...
Where did you leave it?
On the bedside table. So I said to... So she got a bit nasty, and I said to Frank, I said, Frank, you do us a favour, will you? I mean, although it wasn't a Rolex or anything, it was the only watch I had,
so
I needed it, and it was, just reasonably expensive.
Secondo or something.
Yeah, something like that. I said, can you do us a favour, Frank? I said, will you go round and get my watch? He said, well, really? I said, I can't. I said, I'm afraid, we're not talking, it's not
so
good.
Did you still see her in the bar, though?
Yeah, I still saw her in the bar, but I just got something else to buy the drinks. I didn't go face her across the bar or anything like that, And
that's great.
And the trial only went on for 3 weeks. This was about the second week.
Yeah, well, so another week to go.
Well, I found something else to drink or something like that, But anyway, the point of the story is, this dad, the guy had come home.
Yeah.
He was some sort of fucking workman, carried a bag of spanners around with him or something. When Frank went round to get the watch, he said... Oh, there it is. It was on the bedside table. Yeah. Got a hammer and smashed it in front of Frank. And said, there, you can give me his fucking watch back.
That's brilliant.
And Frank brought it back.
Yeah.
And he couldn't contain his laughter. And he showed it to everybody else,
That's
here's
brilliant.
My Paris watch. I know. It's disgraceful, wasn't it?
That is absolutely a shocking disgraceful. Story. I had a similar one I met a girl in a bar in New York.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, it used to be up near the news building when they moved, because they used to be down on South Street Seaport.
Yeah.
But then they moved uptown.
Sorry, you mean...
News...
Not the news. Murdoch's paper.
News Limited. Well, no, it was News Limited.
News Limited,
it was the Bureau. It was the
Post.
The Post moved from down on South Street Seaport...
That's right, to Sixth Avenue.
Up to Sixth Avenue. Yeah. But the news organisation moved further uptown on the east side.
Yes.
And for a while, they were in a building nearby the... not far from the Plaza.
I know.
Up on just off sort of Madison Avenue.
Yes.
And there was a bar that I used to go to there, and there was this very nice American girl there behind the bar.
Mm.
And I ended up in there one afternoon and somehow ended up taking her home.
Yeah, right.
And she left her watch at my place.
Oh, really?
And I wasn't meant to be
doing
that.
You didn't smash it, did you?
I didn't smash it, but I didn't really want to fucking see her again because the point is I wasn't meant to be there. My soon-to-be wife was on holiday down in seeing her sister down in
disgraceful
North Carolina.
That really is alley cat behaviour, isn't it?
No, she's gone to visit her family, right?
So yeah,
I was on my own.
You decided to get your leg over while she was away.
Well, an opportunity presented itself, right?
And this is before you got married?
Yeah, I think so.
Good God.
But we were living together, though.
That was disgusting.
In that place on 36th Street.
Behaviour. Honestly.
And, she was great. Yeah. But, I mean, I remember her... Because in those days, without any mobile phones or anything...
Yeah.
I think I can't imagine how she got a hold of me.
Mm.
I think she turned up.
Right.
Right, because I found her watch and I thought, I don't know what to do with this.
No, what am I going to do?
I'm fucking throw it away.
No, exactly.
And it turned out that I think she turned up.
Right.
Like the next day.
Turned up where?
At my flat. I said, you can't fucking come back here.
Good God.
You'd
take her home?
Yeah, yeah.
Bad tactics,
Well,
man.
I didn't have anywhere
Suppose
else to
Suppose
she'd
turn up when your wife-to-be had come back the following week.
Well, luckily, that wasn't the case.
Yeah, yeah.
She came back quite soon after, though.
Right.
Because I remember having to kind of...
make up all sorts of stories
de-louse
again.
The place. Well, no, but there was an incident with some... what's it? Well,
perfume?
Like some massaging oil.
Oh,
which was rather
good.
Fragrant.
God, this gets worse.
So I had to get rid of the
Absolutely
smell.
Worse.
Anyway, never mind all that. Yeah. Luckily, we're out of time.
Well, no, just one more little story I've got to tell you.
Many more
As
to
we were
about
talking
that.
About women there, right? Women boxers, okay? Do you know the first women boxers date back to 1722?
Do you know what I saw the other day?
Go on, yeah.
A picture from Everton of the first Everton football players who were female.
Yes.
Which went back to like the last century or the century before last.
Are you sure it wasn't during the First World War when women footballers took the place of male footballers?
Well, it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
A very old picture of some women playing football.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
But this is the funniest story in this, okay? Yeah. But it's been happening, you're right, for 100 years. A man and wife couple made their living... by fighting each other in the ring.
What?
Yeah. Birmingham boxer Billy Noon gave exhibition bouts...
Well, he used to fight his wife.
Yeah, with his wife as his opponent in the 20s. Annie Newton was proclaimed the greatest woman boxer in the world...
Fucking hell.
...and quite often beat her husband to a pulp...
Really?
...in the ring. Yeah.
How bizarre.
Yeah. And another famous boxer of the day was Barbara Butterick, female boxer, born in 1930 in Cottingham, York.
Oh, yeah.
She was only 4'11" tall.
Blimey.
But she was known as the Mighty Atom because she used to reduce her opponents to blood-spattered wrecks.
Blimey.
And this was big before the Second World War.
I thought you didn't like female boxing.
I don't like female boxing. I think it's absolutely dreadful. The earliest recorded bout of female boxers was in 1722 between Londoners Elizabeth Wilkinson of Clerkenwell and Hannah Highfield of Newgate.
Mm.
They fought each other, but were then taken to jail, to Newgate, as it was outlawed at the time.
Newgate was a jail, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, can you believe that? Can you believe a man and his wife fighting, literally fighting in the ring against each other?
That's not
and
good.
The bloke getting beaten up?
Yeah, that's not good.
Not good.
I'm not in favour of that.
No.
We're the two mics.
Yeah.
And what a nightmare.
Yeah, complete nightmare.
So did you have to try to sober up or what?
Well, I couldn't sober up. It was obvious I couldn't. And so I went upstairs with Eve, and all I could think of saying was, Eve, you know, you're a woman of elegance. You know, you're very intelligent.
Did you compliment her large breasts?
No, I didn't. No. I fell short of that. But I said, you're intelligent. intelligent. Yeah, and I kept saying things you know, you're one of great style, you know.
Right.
You have presence. You know what I am, Eve?
Right.
I'm a fucking street fighter. Yeah. I'm your street fighter, Eve. I can be. And every time I said it, Eve, you know, looked more and more
grimaced.
Askance.
Yes.
Yeah, and grimaced. Yeah,
yeah.
Well. In particular, Bombers were not allowed to have, distinctive cleavages.
Really?
No, they weren't. They weren't. They had to look manly.
Well, hang on. I mean, you wouldn't really, in those days, 100 years ago,
you
wouldn't surely encounter a woman with a massive cleavage in a bar.
Yeah.
Would you?
Of course you would.
Why?
Well, hang on. Haven't you seen the taverns in the Middle Ages where the serving wenches had fulsome breasts?
Yeah, but that was...
Fell out of their cotton blouses,
right.
Eh?
Yeah, but that was the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
We're talking Victorian times where everything was covered up.
No. Really?
They even used
what
to cover
Lily
up...
What about Lily Langtry?
They used to cover up the fucking the chairs and the tables.
No.
Yeah, they did.
No, but not in bars in Glasgow.
Really?
Tom just one day just said fuck you and just put the phone down and walked out.